Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
We're back, and I am Glenn the Geek from a very rainy Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 26, 2011, episode 236, sponsored today by Omega Alpha. Good morning, Horse World.
Hey, girls, it's Monday.
There's something wrong with us, something very, very wrong with us.
But it's still Monday.
So we're back, everybody. And did you sleep in every day last week, Jamie?
Well, Glenn, you know, when you own a farm, you never actually sleep in, like, in, but I would say that I did sleep until about 8 o'clock every morning. So I would sleep through the show, never once turn it on.
Well, you know, that is sleeping in. When you own a farm and you're not up at 6 o'clock, that's like sleeping in 8 o'clock.
Oh, it absolutely is. How was your vacation? I can't wait to hear everything. I saw all your pictures on Facebook. You guys looked very happy. It was a very beautiful place that you went, which I've never been to Pigeon Forge, so it'll be interesting to hear more about that.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that in a couple of minutes. But first, we have to go back a week. We never heard. You did okay at your show. You were all worried about getting dumped and hurting yourself and your horse running off into the next state and, you know, in that event you were at last weekend. And none of that happened.
Well, sort of. I completed the Coconino horse trials with my horse Jet. My husband was there. My mom came because she was in town, so it was kind of a family affair. And just the quick recap is, yeah, I was scared to death because I haven't had an arena here at my house. My coach Barb was out of town at the AECs, so I had basically nowhere to practice. So I trotted around in my field, you know, walk, trot, canter, but the footing's not good enough to really jump or really, really practice. So I thought, well, I'll just go completely underprepared because last time I was overprepared and really didn't help me at all. So why not go underprepared? So I went out there and do you remember I was really nervous for the warm-up.
Yeah, because last time warm-up didn't go so good.
Yeah, that didn't change much. So, dressage warm-up, he was, you know, it was on the racetrack, but I rode at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. was my ride. I was the first ride, and I really do think that that helped me in the way that the judge was being kinder earlier in the morning as opposed to harder. So my score was pretty good, but if you recall how the last dressage test went there, do you remember he did his little airs above the ground movement?
Yes, which is not in the test.
No, it's definitely to buck, twist, fart, and bolt is not in the test at all. And that's what he did the first time. So we were actually in the same dressage arena and doing the exact same test, and at the exact same moment in the test, in the exact same location, in the exact same arena, he did the exact same thing. But
well, he's consistent anyway.
Bart, he is consistent. The good thing is I think I was more prepared for it this time, so I didn't almost fall off. I actually wrote it out and kept just, it's in the canter transition when you ask for the right lead canter. I don't know what it is. And my coach was, we laughed because he was actually listening to me in this test, which was a change. I mean, the first time it was like attaching reins to the back of your pickup truck and then trying to slow it down going down the freeway. So this one was an improvement. So he actually was like at moments listening to me a little bit, except for that one moment. He just had like a crazy moment. And I don't know if that's thoroughbred in him or what, but he did that. And I did get my judge's comments back. And I wanted to do was have, I had a 54 the first time and the lower the better. And so that's not a great score. I ended up with a 36.2 and in the bottom of the comments, it was improved because she wrote was, that was a very exciting ride. Which I thought
that's
was
like
nicer
saying,
than the
that's
last
like
judge.
When you're going out on a date and you say, oh, she had great personality.
Yes. Exactly. She's sweet.
Yeah. She's very nice.
Yeah. So yeah. That afternoon was show jumping, and we went clean, although the warm-up was definitely a challenge. And then cross-country, thank God, was last, because this horse loves the cross-country. I mean, he figured it out. He tried to jump. You know, when you go on a cross-country course at a horse trial like this, there's many other jumps around the jump you're going to. I mean, and they have run all the way up through prelim, which can be a pretty big fence. Sorry, my dog went underneath my feet. Are we still on?
Yes, we're still here.
Okay, shoot. So there's a lot of different jumps, and he was trying to jump anything in front of him. At one point, he aimed for like a 4-foot Oxer big spread. I was like, I had to pull him off of it. He just was a cross-country machine. He was very good. All told, Glenn, the improvements were great, because the first time versus the second time, this time he only tried to buck me off four times. That is a
big. And you rode everyone?
I rode every one of them out, did not get bucked off. He did not do anything on our last ride on Sunday morning, so really good. And we ended up in fifth place on our dressage score, so yay!
Well, that's terrific. You actually got a ribbon, I saw.
I did. I got a pink ribbon. It was fantastic. So the one thing that they did do, they decided to change the cross-country time. So when I thought I was supposed to finish at 5:09, that was our cross country optimum time, and I finished exactly at 5:09. However, what they didn't tell you before cross country, and they posted it on the, like a little piece of paper on the start box, which is, by the way, it's now supposed to be ridden in 4:47.
Yes.
How the hell am I supposed to see that on the start box when my horse is trying to buck me off?
Yeah, who's studying the wall of the start box when they're getting ready to go?
I know. So every single person had time penalties in my division, and I would like you to know that I finished exactly at 5:09 because I was timing it, and I did it.
Yeah. You had your yellow watch on. You were there.
I was there with my big yellow watch. So all in all, it was a very successful weekend. I was very happy with him. He showed much improvement. I did have to remind myself that I do this for fun and to enjoy myself. But I was really frustrated with my horse at one point. And your coach is like your therapist at times. You just act stupid to your coach. And I said to Barb, I'm like, Barb, I just want to have fun every once in a while. This is just not fun when he's trying to buck me off. It's just not fun. I just want to have fun. She goes, well, then you should have bought a horse that did this already and not bought a horse that's been running around in the desert his entire life.
She shot you up, didn't she?
Oh, my God. She shut me up big time. I was like, okay, all right. So, yeah, I'm not supposed to have fun because I bought a horse that was part of an illegal gambling ring that ran around in the desert. So,
yep, that's right. That's exactly right. You know, and she's absolutely right. You. It's like dating some of those guys you dated in the past. You're the one that chose.
I didn't know he would try to buck me off all the time, Glenn.
That's what you said about those guys. Same sort of thing.
Oh, boy. Well,
hey,
it was good. Thanks for listening.
Well,
Jennifer,
congratulations.
Please.
That's a definite improvement over last time, I think. I think he
yes.
did better, you know. If you walked away with a ribbon, that's doing much better than he did the first time.
I was very happy with him. When we finished, and I didn't fall off, so we're good.
Yeah, it didn't break anything. And it sounds like anytime you do anything with Jet, they'll break something. That's a good thing. I'll talk for you. Jennifer, what's
Thanks.
Coming up?
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, we will do our best to catch everyone up, as just demonstrated, on the antics, adventures, ambles, amusements, and annoyances experienced by our intrepid hosts during the past 14 days in their absence from the interweb airways. And if that weren't enough, best-selling author Elizabeth Letts will be here to talk about her book about show-jumping legend Harry Dallaire, and thank you, Shelley, over at USPC headquarters for setting this up with Liz. And being keenly aware that our listeners are up for adventures as much as anyone, we will have our first in a long series of ticket giveaways for the Alltech National Horse Show, which will be debuting here in Kentucky this fall, having spent most of its life in the Northeast. It's moving down here south, and we can't wait to do that. Stay tuned.
All right, terrific. Well, I have a couple daily winnings, actually. I wanted to thank Jared Rogerson and Shay of the Rigel Band for being our guest last week for doing the recorded musical episodes. If you missed those, please go back and take a listen. I know that there were some good comments about both of them, and you can find their CDs online, and there's some information on our Facebook page about that as well. But we appreciate both of them. We're going to add their music to the lineup here, so that's going to be nice. We also want to thank our friends Bob and Melinda for a great trip. They were with us the entire week. And I have one more daily win. And this goes out to David Saunders, who was one of the recorded shows that we put up last week, an interview we did with him on the driving radio show. He was the coachman to the Queen. And it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, David. We hope you have a great day and get to go out and drive some nifty horses, which he does almost every day. So that's not such a big deal for him, but happy birthday, David. If you want to catch any of those episodes, they're still up there. So if you missed any of those episodes, special ones we did for last week, you can just go to horsesinthemorning.com. And do you have one, Jamie?
I do. So my daily winning goes out to, we're having a bit of a battle in our house right now between my husband and the cat. The cat
the outdoor cat that now lives indoors.
Yeah, that cat. The cat that we got to live outdoors, but then he hides all the time and he's like starving himself and he goes into like, you know, I'm like he protests or something being outside. So then I have to bring him in and I get him to eat and I get him to drink. And then I try to put him back outside and he goes and he hides. And then he almost dies from starvation and dehydration. Then I have to go find him and bring him in and get him to eat. It's constant. I don't know what's wrong with this cat. He's just not a real cat. So this morning I had let him out last night. I'm like, you're going to go outside. You're going to be a cat. And then I would like to let him in the morning and then let him out at night and then bring him in the morning. And it just shouldn't be this hard. So I go out this morning by the way, this is 4:45 a.m. my time. I'm out there, kitty. Can't find the dang cat. I'm trying to get him in so I can feed him his breakfast and get everything set up before I have to start this radio show. So I'm calling the cat, and I hear, meow, meow, meow. And I'm looking, and I can hear him. I just can't see him. So I called Chad, who also my husband had to be up this early. And I was like, honey, I can't find a cat. Come outside and help me find a cat. He's like, I hate that cat. I don't want to help you find that cat. So
I don't blame him.
So he goes back inside. I'm like, you're a jerk. I'm out there looking for the cat. And guess where the cat is? The cat is on the stinking roof of my house. The roof.
Was he stuck up there?
Glenn, I don't know. So my husband at that time, I go, honey, I can't get the cat down. I've taken food out there. I've shaken it. I've tried to get him down. And he won't come down. He's just standing there. And he's meow, 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 meow. Like, it looks like he can't get down. So I say, honey, I can't get the cat down on the roof. And I have to go to work. And I can't get the cat down. Where's the ladder? He's like, the ladder's out front. But just don't climb up the ladder. I'll do it. So I come in here, I'm talking to you guys before the show, and I look outside, and my husband is at the top of a ladder in his flight suit, by the way, because he's about to go fly a jet airplane. He is on a ladder, perched across, trying to grab the cat, who is rubbing on his hand, but every time he tries to grab the cat runs away. So he can't get the cat off the roof. He comes in here, like, I hate your cat. Your cat's on the roof. Leave it up there. I don't want you to go get the cat on the roof at all. So what am I supposed to do, people? All you cat owners, will the cat get itself down, or am I going to have to call the fire department?
Well, you know, if you lived here in Kentucky, it wouldn't be a problem because the rain would just wash the cat off the roof. So that wouldn't be a problem at all.
Here, the sun is going to bake the cat into a tiny little raisin. So,
and I'm absolutely sure that is what Chad is hoping will happen today.
Yeah, I appreciate him trying to help me with the cat. So I would like to know, maybe this can be our question of the day. My cat is stuck on the roof. Will he get himself down, or will I have to call the fire department? Has anybody had this experience? What do I do?
My prediction is by the time you get the show done, your cat will be off the roof.
That's your prediction. So you don't think that I have to do anything?
I don't think you have to do anything. I think the cat's going to be off the roof. And if he isn't, just call it natural selection when he turns into a raisin later in the day.
Darwinism?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We certainly don't want that Dublin breeding.
You're about as sweet and sensitive as my husband, Glenn. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Us horse husbands don't have much tolerance for stupid cats. I can tell you that. That's one of the things we don't have much tolerance. We have a lot more tolerance for dogs than we do stupid cats.
Well, oh, my God, if our dog did anything. Oh, if your dog was stuck on the roof, Chad would, you know, tear down part of the house to get the dog down, you know, of course.
I'm with him on that. I predict by the end of the show, he'll be at your window looking in at you, and you'll be saying, yeah, you're right. He's right out there by the end of the show. Because he's going to get down because he has to drive Chad crazy some more, and he knows that. So, you know, he knows what his job is. That's what the cat's job is, to drive the husband crazy. Especially when the cat was not the husband's idea, and bringing it in the house certainly was not the husband's idea.
No, he's kind of mad about this whole thing, really.
Yeah, I can tell. Hey, so we had a great time on vacation. We never got zip lining because it did rain every day we were there. But I'll tell you what, it was kind of beautiful with the rain and our cabin. When you go to Pigeon Forge, you're in the you're at the edge of the Smoky Mountains, and it's different than the Rockies and other mountain ranges because it is all trees. I mean, that's all you see is trees. And I posted some pictures on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning on Facebook this morning. And you're going to see that, by the way, Sumiko says, cat got up there, he'll be able to get down. I'm with you, Sumiko. We had this beautiful cabin. That's one of the neat things about going down there is you don't have to get a hotel room. You can rent these beautiful cabins. They're very affordable. And it was at the top of a hill. We had a view that was incredible. And it was just neat. So every morning we had this wraparound porch. You get up and you go out and you watch the fog come up in between the mountains. And, you know, it's just kind of neat. It was. I know that was Jennifer's favorite part every morning, was reading a book and sitting there and watching the sun come up and the fog come up between the mountains. That was neat. But
It did rain every time we wanted the zip line, so we didn't get to do that. But we did get to do some adventurous things. We got Jennifer on a four-wheeler up the side of a mountain. And
woo!
Let me tell you, it was a four-wheeler ride. I don't know if you've done serious ATV riding, but this was over rocks and up steep hills and down steep hills and, you know, through streams and the whole thing. So, and we had some beautiful views. A couple of those pictures you see there were taken at the top of the hill from the four-wheeler ride. And she did a great job. You know, Jennifer has some chest issues with some broken ribs, and we said, I don't know if she's going to be able to do this because you do get a pounding. And they actually had a automatic steering, a power steering four-wheeler. So it takes most of the brunt of the jarring or going over the rocks and everything, and she was able to do it just fine. So we had a blast doing that, but she said if she did that, then I had to go on a trail ride. So,
I did.
You saw the picture. I got on a horse, my little standardbred there. Got on a horse, and they were very nice to us at Walden's Creek Stables, which is right outside of Pigeon Forge. They own about 600 acres there, and we're going to try and get the guide on tomorrow. He's a neat guy. We're going to try and get him on tomorrow to chat with us. But we had a great ride. I'll leave it to that till we get to chat with him. And he was very good to us. We went out for about an hour and a half up and down the hills and the mountains. And I don't like doing hills so much. I don't like doing hills so much on anything. And I especially don't like downhill. When you do hill work, which do you like least, the uphill or the downhill?
Doing hill work on a horse, there is nothing more fun than running up a hill on a horse. But as far as the downhill goes, Glenn, I usually don't point my horse straight down the hill. We do a little bit of a zigzag, you know, like a little bit of left and then a little bit of right, and you kind of zigzag down the hill. It's better for their stifles anyway. What did you do?
Well, you don't have much room to do that on this trail that's surrounded by trees. So we did, you know, you pretty much let your horse do what he wants to do on the rocky and somewhat muddy trail on the side of the mountain because it had been raining all week. So it was interesting. I mean, I survived. I got my trail ride in and did very well. I think Jennifer would even admit that she was kind of impressed. But she's not jumping in to come to my defense, I noticed.
I was surprised. Impressed, yes, but surprised more. It's only taken me 23 years to get you to get on a horse while we were on vacation.
That's it. You mean this is the first time he's done a trail ride on vacation?
That's the first time he has ever sat on a horse on a vacation.
Well, see, we've always had this rule in the past because we had boarding stables and all that stuff, that when we went on vacations, the horses weren't allowed. That's always been the rule in the past when we had our big farm because you just wanted to get away from horses. So, or at least this horse husband wanted to get away from horses. And this
I was
going to
say, that's your rule.
Yeah, exactly.
That's your rule.
Another horse husband rule. Sort of like your husband wants to get away from the cat. That's kind of the same thing. He goes to work just to get away from the cat.
Can I ask you a question about this horse? You texted me the picture, right? I think right after the ride. And I texted you back because this horse is... The picture, first of all, the picture that I see, you look incredibly skinny. You need to eat more. Second of all, the horse is very narrow and upright, and his legs, he just, to me, looked like a gated horse. And I know it's in Tennessee, and they have a lot of Tennessee walkers, so I texted you the question, is that horse a gated horse? Because, you know, I don't ride many gated horses, and I'm interested in learning how comfortable they are, how different they are. So I asked you, is this a gated horse you rode? And what does Glenn write me back, Jennifer? He writes back, yeah, it's gated. Its gait is a walk.
That's right. That's all we did was a walk. That's what gate we did. It was gated walk.
Yep. So, Jennifer, will you answer, right. Was it a gated horse?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So no trotting. It was like a running walk.
Well, if we had gone fast enough to get beyond a putt-putt walk, it would have been. It was a very gentle pace, which suited Glenn perfectly.
How about you? You were bored?
I was okay with it because I was just enjoying the scenery. You know, I couldn't see Glenn because he was in front of me. They always put the weakest participant in the group closest to the guide. Therefore, while four-wheeling, I was in the front.
Yes, she was in the front.
He'd be right there, and he was staring at me the whole time. So Glenn was in front of me. But even from the back, I could tell he was occasionally turning green. even from the back. But he was a good sport about it. But I must say, Glenn does have a slight tendency when riding to ride the brakes a little bit. He kept asking me why his horse was going the way it was going, and I said, Glenn, you're riding the brakes.
I don't like those downhills, especially when they're steep and with muddy steep. I
but
don't
you
like
can't get down the hill
never,
if you don't put your foot off, take your hand off the brake.
I could never do that donkey ride down the Grand Canyon, that's for sure. No way. I can take a four-wheeler down, but not the mule.
Yeah, that's
not the donkey.
Great.
I couldn't do it.
Doing the mule ride would not work for you, no.
No,
not at all. Hey, Glenn, did you recount the story of your wildlife encounter while riding your horse?
Oh, you know, I thought we'd save that for when the guide comes on tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I thought we'd save that one.
He saw his insurance rates going up there for a second, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Of course, I had the experience of the wild animal getting in the way, but nothing like a story we're going to tell you later in the show. Nothing like that brave woman guide. I would like to think that our guide that we had would have done the same thing as we're going to tell you about later in the show, but I'm not sure. So we'll tell you about that. This was certainly a lot scarier than anything we ran into, that's for sure. But no, we got to see a bunch of dinner shows and had a good time. We got to see the Lumberjack show, which is brand new there. It's a dinner show where they do lumberjack stuff. That was kind of fun. But the Comedy Barn when you go to Pigeon Forge, the Comedy Barn is the thing you have to see. It is hilarious every time you go to see it. We've seen it probably three times now, and it's funny each time you go. And if you've never been to Pigeon Forge in Gatlinburg, it's like the beach in the mountains. It's just like the boardwalk in the mountains with all the crappy little shops and all that stuff. It looks like if you didn't know better and you had slept the whole way there, when you're driving down Main Street of Gatlinburg, you would have thought you were at the beach.
I was about to say, where on earth were you that there was a beach in the mountains? I didn't understand that at all.
That's another story we're going to have for later in the day during our weekend roundup segment is about another dinner theater there, Dixie Stampede, who's having a little bit of trouble and not handling it very well, I might add. So we're going to talk about that during our news segment later in the show, too. But it was fun. We had a great time. It was very relaxing. I know that I got a text from you that you were sleeping in late every morning, and you were very happy about that. And I really expected the next text to be, and can we please change the show to later in the day? But I didn't get
That's coming later. I'm going to do a public vote on this and see with our listeners, you know, would it be more convenient to listen live later on in the day? Like, this could be like a post. It could be horses after lunch. And I think that is a great idea for a show.
You're getting a lot of comments on the rescue, but the one I think is the funniest is Colleen, who writes, if the weather's nice, let him figure it out. If it's crummy outside or he's not getting it, I vote for saving the undoubtedly ungrateful animal. I love that, Colleen.
He is completely, undoubtedly ungrateful. Now, I got to ask another question about your vacation, because you talked so darn fast through the whole thing. I didn't get to interject with personal questions.
Oh, sorry about that. So, I haven't talked in a week. It's been, you know, they didn't let me talk on vacation, so I have to catch up. See? The dog even agreed. Did I get to talk?
The dog wants to talk. That was perfect sonata, by the way. Probably the cat is jumping down, and that's what she's barking at. when I think of Pigeon Forge, because I'm from the South, I was born and raised in Atlanta, Georgia. And
I've never been there.
I never been there because if I was going to take a vacation, I would go further away, you know. I mean, I've never been to Savannah, Georgia. I've never been to, you know, we would go to Florida to the beach. I'm a beach person for sure. Over mountains any day. Beach. So, when you go to Pigeon Forge, the only thing I remember about Pigeon Forge is growing up and hearing the commercials on television about Dolly World. If you're going to go to Pigeon Forge, you got to go to Dolly World, my friend, because Dolly Parton has a Dolly World. Is that true? And is there still a Dolly World? And did you go?
We didn't go to Dolly World. We did it last time we were there. It's an amusement park. It's a small amusement park. And it's nice. They have a lot of shows there with country music, of course. You can go see Dolly Parton's bus that she used to travel in. You can go see her bus with her big makeup cabinet and all that stuff. You can take a tour of her bus, and they have roller coasters, and, you know, just they have a really neat train. Jennifer likes the train. But we did not go to Dolly World this time. As I said, it rained almost every day, so we tried to fit in activities that were a little shorter in duration. But I want to go back down for Christmas time. Apparently, they really deck out Dolly World for Christmas time. They have a zillion lights, and they really do a bunch of Christmas stuff during that time. So we want to get down there. But the busiest season at Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, down there in the Smoky Mountains, is coming up. October is their busiest season because of the leaves changing. We have never been there during the leaf changing, and I hear it's just absolutely unbelievable. So that's one thing I'd like to do at some point, too. Rates just about double for everything in October there. That's their busiest time.
Wow. Huh.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
Yep. So
Dolly
good
World
time. Now we're
place.
Back. Dolly
oh,
World
Dollywood.
Is a place.
Dollywood. Sorry.
Dollywood is a place. Yes. It's Dollywood.
Dollywood.
That's correct. We were calling Dollywood. We were calling it Dolly World the whole time we were there, too. So
it's Dolly Parton.
It like,
I mean,
yes. And her billboard and picture is everywhere down there. I mean, she is what really made that place what it is today.
Oh, my God. I just had the greatest thought ever. Dollywood is going to eventually sell out. And they're going to sell Dollywood, and it could be, called Oprahland. Oprahland. How is there not an Oprahland, but there's a Dollywood?
That's true. That's very true. All right. I just noticed that we have to do a commercial for Omega Alpha, but we don't have any text in there for that. So do you want to wing it?
Yes, because I use my Omega Alpha Equine Chill at the horse trial. Omega Alpha has all these awesome products. And they have something called Equine Chill. And what that is you give it to your horse about an hour before you go out, like on a day that he would be particularly stressed out, like a competition. Equine Chill, you give it to him, and it just kind of, like, calms him down. And it really, really worked this time. I mean, the last time he was so amped up that I didn't see, like, a huge – I mean, again, if it worked last time, he would have killed me. If I didn't give it to him. So this time I gave it to him again and really, really helped. It really, really did. He was much quieter going down to the warm-up arena, going down and even focusing on his job. Like I said, because of Equine Chill, I gave it to him. We went down and he focused on our dressage test. There was moments in it where he was fantastic. We even got an 8 in our dressage test. Okay. It's Equine Chill right there for you. Other thing I did...
Okay, hold on a second. Hold on. What'd you get an 8 on in your dressage test?
Check this out. What did I get an 8 on? A, enter, working trot. C, track right. There's no halt salute. I got an 8 going down the center line. That is amazing.
At the very beginning
judge...
of the test?
Yes, I think she was optimistic at the beginning.
She was hopeful.
But that meant he was straight. That meant he was straight. The other thing I gave him was the Gastro FX, you know, throughout the entire thing. It's just kind of helps their stomach out. And this horse has a history of ulcers. So the Gastro FX, the Equine Chill, definitely check out their products because, you know, at a horse trial, you can't use bute. You can't, you know, you get tested for everything. And these are all natural herbal health products. So they're not testable. They're not illegal. There's nothing that is going to give you, you know, any more of an advantage over another competitor because they can use these products too. So give yourself a little bit of an advantage. If they're not using Equine Chill and you need some or Gastro FX or any of that stomach stuff, check it out at omegaalpha.ca. I hope I did an okay commercial for them, but
yes, you did.
Excited.
I do have a question though. The Equine Chill, did you take, was it a scoop for your horse and a half a scoop for you?
Actually, you do it like a shot. I gave him 60 cc's of it. So you put the little syringe in there and you draw out 60 cc's and you give it to him about an hour before you go out and compete. And then I just swigged from the bottle.
That's funny. That's funny. That just reminded me. I just thought about it. You know, we did that whole vacation. It's probably the first vacation that we've ever had where we didn't have one alcoholic beverage at all because Pigeon Forge, the county, Sevier County there, is dry.
That's why I've never been there.
That's it. And we forgot to go to the liquor store before we went, and it was like we never got around it. You'd have to drive all the way to Knoxville to get liquor, and it was like, oh, geez, that was a pain. So we never did. We had a lot of iced tea, but we never had alcohol. I think that's probably the worst vacation ever that that happened.
You guys are crazy. I just realized that.
Hey, we got Jennifer did a review on a book a while back, and then she sent you the book, and we have the author on here. And so tell us, you started on this book, right?
Yes, I am about halfway through what I would consider one of my favorite books that I've ever been halfway through. And I know it's just going to get better because I know the ending. But the book is called The $80 Champion. Snowman, the Horse That Inspired a Nation. And the author is Elizabeth Letts. And, I'm really thrilled to talk to Elizabeth today because I don't know anything about how she wrote this book. How, you know, obviously it's a true story, but how this even happened, I'd never heard this story before. And this is, it's just a phenomenal book. So just to... maybe I should just have Elizabeth tell us about it. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, thank you for writing this. I think it's a fantastic book, and like I said, I'm halfway through it, and I know it's just going to get better, and it's going to make me cry probably at the end. But go ahead and tell everybody about Snowman and about Harry Blair.
Absolutely. Well, The $80 Champion is the story of Snowman, the horse that inspired a nation. And it's a story from the late 1950s. Harry DeLayer was an immigrant from Holland. He had lived through the war. He was a horse guy and had grown up riding in Holland. But when the Nazis actually occupied his village in Holland, and he, after the war, he immigrated to the United States basically just to try to make a better future for himself. But he tucked his saddle and boots into the one suitcase that he brought with him, just kind of dreaming and hoping that maybe someday he could get back into horses. It didn't seem very likely because he was going to work on a tobacco farm. But you know how horse people are. He kept trying to ride a little bit. He found some workhorses on the farm and rode them a little bit, and then he ran into some horse people who said, you know, you should be in horses. You shouldn't be working on a tobacco farm. He ended up getting a job on a girls' school up on Long Island where he had to teach lessons. And he was down in Pennsylvania at the New Holland Auction looking for a lesson horse for the girls at his school when one day he came across a horse that had already been sold to the guy who was going to take it to the dog food factory. Harry got to this sale late, and so the horse was loaded up onto this van, and all he saw was just the one eye of the horse looking at him through the slatted sides. It was like a cattle truck. And Harry said, well, how much is that horse? And the guy who was selling him said, oh, you don't even want him. He's all beat up and everything. And Harry said, no, let me take a look at him. He kind of felt bad for the horse because he had a sweet look on his face. And they unloaded him from the van, and he was thin, and he had harness marks on his front, like he had been a plow horse or maybe pulled a cart or something. And Harry said, well, I'll take him. Bought him for $80. Took him home. And fattened him up and kind of fed him and sold him to a neighbor for $160. And he was pretty happy. He had made a profit, and the horse looked good, and he had sent him to a good home. And that should have been the end of the story, except that the horse, who he had named Snowman, kept jumping the pasture fences to come back to Harry's farm. And that's when Harry said, you know, if he can jump pasture fences, maybe he can jump. And he started trying to see what he could do. A year and a half later, Harry and Snowman were the National Open Jumper Champions at the National Horse Show.
Oh, I have goosebumps just hearing you talk about it. Because just going back to him, you know, interspersed throughout the book is the story of him and his wife immigrating, and the war going on. And, you know, just nightmare stuff. And actually, Harry was a hero over in Holland. I mean, he saved lives. I mean, he's just a phenomenal guy. And then comes over here to the say that again?
Oh, I just said he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
He was such a hero.
a total hero, and he comes over here to the United States, like you said, packs his saddle and his boots into the one suitcase. I just moved into a new house, and it took us like 14 trailer loads. So
exactly.
And I moved a mile and a half. And this guy went across the country, across the world, with one suitcase and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Packing.
Yeah,
in
we forget. I mean, we forget, you know, what it was like for those people, and how little they really had, and how much people were really starting from absolutely nothing to try to build a life for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he went through kind of, you know, working at some different barns and working at some places, cleaning stalls and just working to get to his own place and then taking care of his horses. But to read the part about Snowman being sold down the road, you know, they used him as a lesson horse. Harry broke him, got him started because he was an old plow horse. This is an old plow horse. I mean, it's just that kind of story that everybody, you know, thinks could happen when they find a potential horse. Like, I got one from the sheriff's department. I'm like, okay, he's going to ride his Rolex next year. And I spent $400 on him. You know, of course, that never happened, but it did.
Yes, it did. And Snowman was not a horse who really showed off his talent. And that was very clear to me, not just from talking to Harry, but I had a chance to interview some of the girls who knew the horse before he ever became a champion. And they said, he was like the horse that you didn't want to have to ride in the lesson because it meant you weren't a very strong rider because he was so quiet. But they would trot him over Cavaletti, and he would just kind of stumble and put up a crossbar. He wouldn't pick up his feet. He just didn't seem to have any particular abilities. And he wasn't real pretty. He was sort of heavy-boned, and it looked like he was, you know, maybe had some draft horse in him.
Now, was Harry eventually known as the Flying Dutchman? Is that the same person?
Yeah, he was. Well, in those days, they called him the Flying Dutchman, and then later his nickname became the Galloping Grandfather.
Okay. All right. I kind of thought that was the same one. And how
mm-hmm.
did you come, what, you know, you're a writer, right? You've done other things. You,
uh-huh.
How did you end up doing a book about him? Where did you discover the story? Because this is one that, you know, really has been put aside in the memory banks and forgotten by three quarters of the horse world.
Right. Well, you know, so I was a horse person. I grew up, I was in Pony Club for many years, and I rode jumpers for a while, and then I went into eventing. And then I gave it up, and I went on, and I moved on to other things. But I think once you, you know, once you're a rider, it never really gets out of your bloodstream. So I always had dreamed that I could do a really great horse story, and I just hadn't found the right story. And I came across a picture of Harry jumping Snowman. It's a very well-known picture where he's actually riding Snowman and the horse is jumping over another horse. The horse is, he's got the one horse in between the two sides of an oxer and he's jumping over it. And the picture just stopped me in my tracks. I looked at it and I thought, whoa, because I thought that I had seen, I grew up in Southern California, we used to see, you know, stunt riders and different things, and I thought I had really seen every single trick known to man and probably tried half of them myself, and I had never seen this particular trick. So, but what I really noticed was how relaxed and happy the horse looked. You know, he's got this, his ears are forward, and the reins are loose, and he just looks like he's passing the time of day. And I thought, how on earth, what's the story behind this? So I started to look into the story, and I realized that not only was Snowman an extraordinary horse, but that Harry had lived through the war and had a very extraordinary life. And that was when I thought, I wonder if I could write a book about this. And I actually tracked down an address for Harry. I did not know him at the time. Sent him a note, and he called me up, and we talked on the phone. When I talked to him, I realized he just turned 84 last Wednesday, but he has the energy of at least three of us. I mean, he's still absolutely going strong. He's got, you know, 30-something horses on his property, and he's got a fantastic memory. I mean, he really remembers very vividly the days when he was in the spotlight. And he cooperated with me in writing the book in being interviewed by me I don't know how many times, in addition to all the research that I did.
I was going to say, what was that first phone call like when you call him, you know, an 80-something-year-old man to ask about something that happened 40 years ago? You know, how did that
this
first phone call
ago.
Go?
Well, it was, you know, my phone rang. Yeah. I had written him a little note, and he called me, and my phone rang, and he's got this very thick Dutch accent, and he said, hello. And he started to talk to me a little bit about the story, filling in some of the details that I didn't know, and I just felt like my hair was standing up on end. I was so unbelievably excited, and I thought, I have got to tell this story. I've got to tell this story. And, you know, that was it for me. I was sold, and I just figured that no matter what it took, I was going to find a way to write this book.
Well, and he must have been thrilled. I mean, you know, this story had been forgotten for 50 years, and then you show up on his doorstep wanting to tell the story and let the world know about it. He had to be thrilled about that.
I think he was excited, but I don't think that he really had any idea what was coming. Because the book just has taken off, and it's been incredibly popular so far. And so his phone has just been ringing off the hook, apparently, since the book came out.
Ah, okay. So his quiet little retirement's not so quiet anymore.
Well, I'll tell you, he's not anything close to retired. He's probably worked harder than the rest of us combined. He's still out,
still
you know.
He still has 30-something horses, and he's 80-something mm-hmm. years old.
He rides every day. He's still breaking horses, and he's got a lot of students, little kids
wow.
mostly.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow. That is really cool. I'm so glad that you told the story and brought it to those of us who have, you know, I this is exactly why you tell a story like this, to bring it to light to people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a piece of history, and it's horse history. And so, you know, what happens afterwards? You finish the book, you get it out there. He's being completely bombarded by people now. And I want to know what happened to Snowman after the show. I guess I could finish the book, maybe. That's
yeah, I think you
need
to finish the book for that one. We're going to have to let the listeners finish the book to find out what happens to Snowman.
Yep, I'm not talking. But I can tell you that, yeah, it's a great story, you know, from start to finish. So.
Well, you know,
you know,
I was just going to say that Jamie has rescued this horse. I just want to give you a heads up. You know, this is early, and I realize that you have a few years, but Jamie's rescued this horse who's sure, his name is Jet, and he's sure to be the next snowman in about another 20 years. And I want to give you the heads up so that you're ready in another 50 years to write the next book.
I will be more than ready.
Okay,
if
good.
I'm going
all right,
strong
Jamie,
like Carrie
no pressure,
is.
Jamie.
And let me go ahead and tell you the end of this book is, and the horse bucked her off. And then the horse bucked her off.
I'll be looking for you at Rolex.
Yeah, I'll be in the crowd.
Do you ride anymore yourself?
You know, I had quit for quite a while, but after getting back into the... to riding, it just took over, and I had to start riding again. So I have been riding. I don't have a horse yet, but it's every day that goes by, it seems to get more likely.
Well, you know, New Holland is still open, so
I know.
I'm just saying, we rescued a few horses at New Holland ourselves, so we
Did
know
you?
That. Matter of fact,
oh.
I had an office when I was in the investment business. My office was two doors down from the New Holland sales table. And
oh, no kidding.
I would see, yeah, that was tough because you see all the horses
yeah.
coming in every Monday and heading
yeah.
out the trucks every Monday, and they
yeah.
still do that. It's still there. But my best pony in the world that I had for a lot of years and drove for many, many years was the best pony ever. I bought for $100 at the New Holland auction. So
I believe it. Yeah, there are a lot of good horses out there looking for homes. There really are right now. It's kind of a tough time for horses.
I guess I didn't realize
right
that the New Holland auction was in existence back then, back in the
50s. It was. Oh, yeah, it's been there since. I think when I looked into it, I think it was founded around the turn of the last century.
Wow. Okay, I didn't realize that. Interesting.
I would have a hard time working that close to an auction like that. I'd have more horses. It would be a big problem. But I'm so glad you told the story. There's some amazing people, and Harry was definitely one of them. It is a feel-good book. I really hope that every one of our listeners goes out and buys it and reads it. Where can they find it? What is your website? Tell everybody where they can find you.
Sure. Well, my website is elizabethletz.com.
Okay.
And the book is really available pretty much everywhere. You can find it online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You can find it in stores, bookstores, and pretty much any local bookstore should have it on their shelves. And if you're an e-reader, it's also available for the Kindle, the Nook, and the iPad.
And do you have another book that's in the works right now, another awesome horse story, or is this a once-in-a-lifetime kind of book?
Well, I have something that I've got my eyes on, and I'm doing the early work on, so we'll keep our fingers crossed for that.
She's not telling on that one either, Jane.
Oh,
no, I'm not telling. But it's terrific, well, I can promise you that.
Pinata, the story of a champion.
Historical animal.
I just have one more question for you. Has this taken off further than you thought it would?
Well, I have to tell you, this is my fourth book, and I think that when you touch a little bit of the snowman magic, something really wonderful happens. The book debuted at number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list, and it's been on the bestseller list for 4 weeks. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Wow.
Fantastic.
That's a horse book that did that.
That's not just a horse book, but that's a horse book that's not about a racehorse that did that.
Well, that's true. Very good point, Elizabeth. Very good point. Well, congratulations. Okay. That says something about your writing and Snowman, both.
Well, thank you very much.
Hold up. We gotta ask Glenn. Glenn, Elizabeth, when is the movie coming out? When is the movie coming out?
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, there certainly are a lot of people interested, but we don't have anything official to announce yet.
Oh, that's so cool. It's so
She's
cool.
She's not talking about a lot of stuff this morning.
Yeah.
I know. She's smart. She's smart.
I just want to see Madison Square Garden. I want to see the National Horse Show in the late 1950s with all the glamour and the gowns and the top hats and the horses. I would love to see that on the big screen.
Oh, I think you will. I think you will. Well, we're very excited. We hope we can call you back when that happens and have you talk about film and the movie.
Absolutely.
Well, congratulations and good luck with all the other negotiations you're going to have to go through now.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you so much for having me on.
No problem, Elizabeth. We appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Our pleasure.
Bye-bye.
The book is called The $80 Champion, Snowman, the Horse That Inspired a Nation. The author is Elizabeth Letts. If you want to check out her website, ElizabethLetts.com, and definitely read this book. I am halfway through it, and I am fascinated. I am not getting stuff done because it's one of those books that you just can't put down. And if you have to go do something, then you just walk through the house with it while you're reading it.
You know, you would have had it done if you had gotten up at 7 instead of 8 every morning last week. I'm just saying. Hey, we want to thank also the Pony Club for helping get Elizabeth on today. She is a graduate pony clubber, and it's the United States Pony Club that helped arrange this interview with her, and we really appreciate them doing that as well. Well, one of the things that you need to do in addition to buying the $80 Champion and, you know, basically taking 3 days out of your life to read it is to do a better job at keeping track of all of your horse's information like farrier visits and shots. Do you have a box full of receipts or post-it notes, or maybe perhaps you just don't keep track of anything at all? Well, the solution to the problem is right there in your iPhone, and it's called Pocket Stable. It keeps all of your horse's information in one easy-to-get-to place. It includes vaccines and wormings and farrier and dentist visits and even the weight of your horse. You can find Pocket Stable in the App Store or on your iPhone or visit them at pocketstable.com. Well, we have a song to play today, and I know it's one of your favorites, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. I love this guy. I think his music is fantastic. We did a musical episode last Monday with Jared Rogerson. If you did not hear it, go back and listen to it because it'll introduce you to some fantastic horse music sung by a dude. I mean, you know, we play a lot of Templeton Thompson. We play a lot of Marianne Kennedy, both ladies that write fantastic songs about horses. This is a guy. And this is my favorite song by him called Peace, Loving Horses.
Peace, queen. Cowboy and hippie, she's all about peace. Love horses and me. She could end the war with just a smile. She can drive a tractor, bailing hay for miles and miles.
Rogerson. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com, and we thank him so much for being part of Horses in the Morning. You are listening to the Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek. This is sponsored today by Omega Alpha, and I am here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is producing. It's kind of ironic that we had an author, Elizabeth Letts, on about the $80 champion, Snowman and the Flying Dutchman, and their win at Madison Square Garden during the National Horse Show. Because our next guest is called Mr. National Horse Show himself. His name is Mason Phelps. He's president of that, and he's very excited about a change to the National Horse Show and a new venue. Good morning, Mason.
Good morning.
So do they still call you Mr. National Horse Show? Do I have that right?
Well, I mean, I guess you in Kentucky have coined me that, and some people have. I'm quite privileged to have that honor bestowed upon me, but thank you.
Well, I think in New York they were just used to having you around all the time. So it's all new for us.
Yeah, I was a fixture for, oh gosh, I go back to the late 60s at the National Horse Show when it was in Madison Square Garden, and haven't missed a one in the last, 35, 40 years. So, yeah, I guess you could call me Mr. National Horse Show. I'm thrilled.
Now
thank
we think you.
You
should get Harry. Is Harry going to be there? You should have Harry there with the book
but
coming
you know,
out.
I only listened to the tail end of that earlier interview. Is Harry still alive?
Yes. And he apparently has still training horses and doing his thing in his 80s and very bright and shiny and would probably love an invitation to come.
Well, you know what? I will happily extend an invitation to Harry and his family, and we would welcome it if they would come to the National Horse Show now that it's coming to Lexington. That would be terrific.
Yeah, because I really think, you know, she was playing coy with us, but I really think we're going to see this story of Snowman put into a movie. And as she said, it debuted at number 10 on the New York Times bestseller list. That's unbelievable for a horse book.
Wow, good for her. Well done.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot to be said, and maybe that would help get some word out about the National Horse Show, too.
Yeah, maybe she'd like to do a little autograph signing right at the National Horse Show.
I'm sure she would be thrilled.
Good. So, I'll reach out to her.
Yeah, definitely. Now, tell us, why did the horse show, National Horse Show, which has always been in New York, and it's moved around New York a bit, but it's always been in New York, and of course it's known for being at Madison Square Garden for so many years. Why did it come to Kentucky?
Well, you know, for 119 years we were at Madison Square Garden, and that venue in downtown Manhattan, it's not exactly the most horse-friendly venue, and it's in a very expensive facility to produce a horse show in. You're hauling the dirt in, the stabling, the trucks on the street. And so a lot of different options were tried as a way to keep the maintain the horse show and keep it going. And they went out to the Meadowlands for a couple of years, and they went to a facility on the pier in Manhattan at the end of 54th Street a couple of times. And then we moved the horse show down to Wellington, Florida, and that worked for a while, but the calendar date wasn't really quite right. Then we had a three-year run in Syracuse, New York, and I'm very happy to say that when the horse park built the Alltech Arena there in Lexington and produced this fabulous indoor facility, we sort of cased it out before the World Equestrian Games last year and decided this was a natural location for the National Horse Show and made the appropriate arrangements and got together with Alltech as one of our title sponsors. And now we have the National Horse Show, the 128th edition, right there in Lexington, Kentucky.
Well, and of course, we've been to, you know, I actually got a tweet from Samantha Clark, who I did the World Equestrian Games radio show there for a couple of years, and it was this day last year we were at the horse park for the start of the World Equestrian Games, which is why that stadium was built.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, it was a great asset to the horse park and to the horse community. And it's just a natural to have that facility there and then used by so many different horse show managers and different disciplines. And we were certainly fortunate that the National Horse Show could get into their calendar when we wanted it and have this horse show come to Kentucky. Couldn't be better.
It's a beautiful stadium. There isn't a bad seat in that entire stadium. We've been in there and watched a number of events now because we live about 4 miles from the horse park. So it's just a beautiful stadium. It's actually a perfect venue for it.
Absolutely is. As you say, there isn't a bad seat in the house. It holds a little more than 5,000 people. It's a great, good-sized indoor arena. And as far as the horsemen are concerned, the stabling's excellent. The practice and warm-up areas are excellent. So I think this is going to be one of the best National Horse Shows we've ever seen.
Okay, I got to ask you a question because, you know, I'm from the South and I don't ride this kind of riding. So to me, as a spectator, what would I see if I was to come to the Alltech National Horse Show?
Well, what you have to understand is it's a national championship. It's a culmination of riders and trainers and horses competing all year long, winning points. We only take the best of the best in the different divisions that we offer. It's all jumping competitions. The big events that really focus every night. We have the international jumpers and the big boys, if you will, and some of those that you have seen compete at the World Equestrian Games. And the Saturday, November 5th, we have the big $250,000 Alltech Grand Prix, which is a World Cup qualifier. And then on Sunday is the tradition of the National Horse Show, which is the ASPCA McClay, which is a class for young riders, junior riders. They spend all year qualifying. They go through a series of regionals. We'll take the best 200 riders in the United States. They'll all come together. And at the end of Sunday afternoon on the 6th, we'll have one winner.
So there's one winner of the whole entire thing, and I guess we know.
There's a lot of different classes and a lot of different divisions. And there's classes for professionals on hunters, which is judged on style and manners and way of going. And then there's what we call the jumper classes, and those are classes for over the much bigger jumps, and the horses are scored on faults and time. We have the Junior Amateur Show Jumping Hall of Fame Year-End Championship, which is a $50,000 class. That's on the Saturday afternoon, the 5th. Then, of course, the big Grand Prix the Saturday night, and then the junior class on the Sunday. So there are champions in every division that's offered in the industry. So it's, you know, you walk away with a champion or even a blue ribbon from this event, and you are definitely in the top 1% of the equestrian world in the United States.
Wow. Wow. So hunters and jumpers, all the different divisions, ages. I just know that there was a person that taught lessons kind of in the area that I grew up, and everybody always said, oh, yeah, she won the McClay.
Yeah, and that would that be? I'll bet it was Anna Jane White.
That was who it was, yeah. So
uh-huh.
That's very cool.
Yeah. There's been the McClay, that's really big. In fact, you know, and one of the questions, the trivia questions we might ask is, there have been 8 winners of the ASPCA McClay over the years. It started in 1933. 8 winners that have gone on to represent the United States in Olympic Games. And it's pretty hard for most people to probably pick which 8 winners those were, but there were 8 of them. And
wow.
You know, if to win that class, you are definitely the best of the best of the junior cropper riders in any given year. And many, many, many of them have gone on to be major professionals in their own right or international riders. So it's a very big deal to win a prize or win the ASPCA McClay.
There was a, Mason, a couple of years ago, there was a TV show about the Medal McClay, and it was
yeah,
a series.
Animal Planet, The Road to the McClay. You're right.
Yeah.
There was.
It was good.
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was,
yeah,
it was terrific.
And
I thought it was good.
Right, and I believe that year Brian Goutal won it, and you will see
yeah.
her jumping on Saturday night and now in the $250,000 Grand Prix. She's graduated out of the junior ranks and competing and representing the United States in international competition, and she will be competing with the best of the best. So just
well,
another
terrific.
Example,
now,
another example of how this class produces international riders.
Well, I was going to say that what we want to do, you're going to have somebody different is going to come on every week up until the National All-Tech National Horse Show to talk about it, and really we're going to promote it, and we're going to be over there. We're hoping to do a morning show there one morning, and I know Chris is going to do a jumping show from over there, so we're very excited about it here in Lexington. But we want to give some tickets away, don't we?
We certainly do. Absolutely.
I think the way we're going to do this is each Monday when somebody comes on, we're going to ask a trivia question, and then we're going to run that through the week, and on Friday we're going to pick from the people who answered the trivia question on our Facebook pages. We're going to pick one of those winners, and they're going to get tickets to the horse show. So tell us, is this going to be, is it 2 tickets?
I believe it is 2 tickets. You know,
okay.
if we have two winners, 3 winners, we can give more than 2 tickets away. But yes, 2 tickets is what we're planning on doing every Monday.
Okay,
correct.
Sounds good. All right, so what's the question for this week?
The question for this week would be, if the ASPCA McClay has produced 8 Olympic riders, I'll bet you can't name 4 of those 8 Olympic riders. So let's see how many people can name 4 of those Olympic riders that have a blue ribbon from this ASPCA McClay class as a junior rider somewhere back when. And I can tell you that the Olympic riders go back dating back to 1941 with Olympic riders that have won this class.
Oh, you're
wow.
making this one tough.
Actually,
I know, right?
If you follow the business a little bit, it's not very tough.
all right, cool. So, Jennifer, do you have that question? You have that written down?
So it's name 4 of the 8 ASPCA Medal McClay winners that went on to represent the United States at the Olympics or international competition?
No, in Olympic Games.
In Olympic Games, got it. Because our listeners are sticklers for details, and if I don't have it right, I will be deleted, I'm sure.
Oh, never happened. No, these would be winners from the McClay who have actually represented the United States in Olympic competition.
All right, sounds good. Well, thank you so much for coming on with us. Best of luck with it this year. We're very excited to be going over there in a matter of a couple of months now. Give everybody
not
the
even.
Date. Yeah, give everybody
six,
the date. Next month.
6 weeks,
yeah.
November 2nd to 6th. So it's, what is it, what, 5 weeks, 6 weeks away.
And everything's
and we,
ready? You're all good to go? You're not nervous at all?
Of course I'm nervous. I think we're always nervous. But, you know, if we wouldn't be, we wouldn't be doing our job right. And we certainly look forward to you broadcasting live right there from the competition. That's going to be fun.
All right. Sounds good. And one of our fans on Facebook just posted, happy birthday, Mason. Is this your birthday?
Oh, my God. Yes, it is.
You've been called out, Mason. You've been
yeah,
called
no,
out.
I mean, you know, I'm at the age where we forget about birthdays.
Didn't I warn you all that our listeners are sticklers for detail? Uh-huh.
Details, apparently,
yes.
Yes.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Well, happy birthday, Mason.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, and best of luck. We're looking forward to seeing you over there.
Terrific. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. And that was Mason Phelps, who is the president of the All-Tech National Horse Show. We appreciate him coming on, taking time out of his busy schedule with only 6 weeks to go till that event starts. And we'll post that question on Facebook. Jennifer, go ahead and post it on there. And I know Chris will be posting it on her shows as well. And on Friday, we'll pick a winner from those who posted correct answers. All right. This is time for...
It's time for the Weekend Roundup.
Well, you talked me into it.
And one of the stories that we teased at the beginning was of this incredible woman who's 25 years old. Her name is Erin Bolster. She is was, you know, she led a trail ride, sort of like the one we went on in the Smoky Mountains there. And Erin Bolster of Swan Mountain Outfitters was guiding 8 clients on a horse ride near Flathand National Forest between West Glacier and Hungry Horse out there at the edge of the Rocky Mountains. And they were doing this kind of trail ride like we did. And it was a group, including a family of 6 that were vacationing. And what happened was she had them out in the trail ride, and she was riding her half Percheron, who, by the way, looks like an incredibly big white horse, was riding out there. And, you know, I can't even describe this. The story is so well written. We're going to post a link to the story. But basically what happened was a deer actually cut in front and hit her horse. So the deer came out of the woods, hit her horse, and glanced off the front of her horse and took off. Well, the reason the deer was in such a hurry was it was being chased by a grizzly bear at a dead run.
Oh.
Well, everybody in her party, all of these poor people who were probably on a horse for the first time, actually the one guy, the father of this boy we're going to talk about, the 8-year-old boy, had been an experienced rider apparently, but the rest of them weren't. Well, when the horses all saw the bear, they took off, they turned around and bolted for the barn. They took off down the path at a dead run, all except for her horse and this horse that the 8-year-old boy was on. Well, what happened was that horse stayed around a little bit longer and then decided he was going to take off too, turned around and headed out down the path. Well, the bear caught the eye of that horse with the 8-year-old boy on it and changed from the deer to that and took off after that horse. So what happened then was this rider, as I read the story, the guide, this Erin, this 25-year-old girl on this huge Percheron, was behind, in other words, behind the bear who was chasing this kid down the path. She said the deer peeled off and joined the horses sprinting down the trail. So the bear just continued running right past me. I'm sure the bear never even knew the roles had changed, but now he was chasing the horse and the 8-year-old boy. Adding to the drama, the boy's father, an experienced rider, could not convince his horse that it was a good plan to ride to his son's rescue. The last thing he saw over his shoulder as his horse ran away was a grizzly chasing his boy. With the bear on the horse's heels, on this boy's heels, she knew she had to do something. So she took off. She convinced her horse, this half Percheron, to take off after the bear and managed to get her horse between the bear and this horse with the boy on it right as the boy fell off. So basically the bear was going to be on the boy, and what she did next was incredible. The bear kept coming at her and her horse. She took off after the bear. She took off and played chicken basically with the bear. She convinced this Percheron to do it and basically charged the bear. And by the way, if you see the picture, Jennifer will post a link to the story. This horse is big. This is not a small horse. But she charged the bear, and apparently at that point, the bear decided that he was outgunned, turned around, and headed back down the path. She saved that boy's life with the help of her half-Percheron. An incredible story. We're going to try and get – Jennifer's going to call over there today. I'm sure she's being swamped with calls. We're going to try and get her on the air to tell this story. Had you seen this story, Jamie?
I had not seen this story, but wow, this horse, this Percheron, Carl, I don't know if it's a Percheron or not, the feet are dinner plates, okay? I mean, this is a big boned horse. And the fact that, I mean, I've ridden in Percherons before, and you cannot get them to go. They don't want to go. The fact that she got this puppy galloping after a bear and chasing a boy on a horse, my God, phenomenal. So we definitely are going to have to get them on the show, for sure.
Yeah, Jennifer's going to give it a try today. As I said, this story has hit national news, so I'm sure. And there's another part to this story that everybody's going to want to hear about, too. It was getting to the end of wrangling season where she was being a guide out there. And all these horses are leased by these companies who lease horses to these places. And she managed, because of what this horse did, she managed to get them to agree she has bought the horse. So she has now bought this horse, and it will be part of her life from now on. She said after that, he had to be mine. I mean, there's just incredible guts by this girl, and who just probably acted on instinct. She didn't have time to think about this. And, you know, incredible guts on the part of the horse. Just amazing.
What a cool just story. Amazing. What a
and
cool story.
There is a line in here I have to tell you. She said that when she got back, of course, everybody was fine. And she said she got the biggest tip of the season from that boy's father.
What a good
bet
story.
She did. That's one of the most incredible stories we've had all year, I think.
That's cool. I can't wait to talk to her. I cannot wait to talk to her. So, good deal. Hey, I got to update you on a story. Jennifer's working on posting the picture right now. But during the song that we played, the Jared Rogerson song, I might have walked outside to see where the cat was. And the question has been answered. Yes, the cat will get off the roof by itself.
See,
yay!
I told you. He's not going to die up there. He's got more tormenting and things to do with your husband.
I know. He's got more harassing to do. So, yes, yeah. I sent Jennifer a picture of the cat. I grabbed the cat during the song and brought him in the house, and I put him in the room with me, and I've got a window. And, of course, he's currently sitting at the window staring forlornly outside. But, yes, the cat came down, and now he wants to go back outside, which is not going to happen today. I've had enough.
Now, is he he's getting tough enough now he can fend off the dogs at this point, right?
No, he hides under stuff, and then they just sit there and bark at him. So
that's annoying,
it's
too.
I'll tell you where he hides. Like, so day one, it was in my horse trailer because I had left little saddle rack area open underneath underneath where they eat. So there's a saddle rack area underneath, and I left it cracked open, and I found him in there. Thank God I didn't close him in and slam the door. The next place was in my tack room of my horse trailer because he got in there because I was cleaning it out from the horse show. The next day, he hides behind some patio furniture outside. The next day, he's underneath our riding lawnmower. He hides underneath...
That's not good if you have to mow that day.
No, but the only reason I ever find him is because the dogs find him and they start barking at him. So it's kind of a good thing.
All right.
Boy.
You have a story about an Australian horse that is just making the news, huh?
Oh, this is, well, we've talked about her before.
This
is the sprinting Zenyatta of Australia. This horse is absolutely phenomenal. Horse's name is Black Caviar, and it is a mare, and she's undefeated right now. I think she's like 15-0. I'm trying to remember how many races she's done, but it's phenomenal, and she's a sprinter. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Right now I have her, and Wikipedia has her as 13-0. The horse has never lost. Fantastic mare. She's 4 years old, her four-year-old season, and she wins the Australian equivalent of Horse of the Year. She won the Australian Racehorse of the Year Awards in Melbourne last night. So very good for her. Check this out, though. She won Horse of the Year. Her jockey won basically the equivalent of Jockey of the Year. The trainer won Trainer of the Year. I mean, anybody associated with this horse is just being honored. It was like Black Caviar Night at the Horse of the Year Awards. So just congratulations to her. I think they're saying that her next race is about 3 weeks away. She's going to be in the Shalassi Stakes at Caulfield. I don't know if I said that right, but 3 weeks away, and she's going to make her return to racing. She's had a couple months off, so very exciting, very cool, and we will definitely keep you up to date on how Black Caviar does in the Shalaki Stakes at Caulfield.
Well, while you're on good stories, we seem to be having a lot of those this morning on our first day back from vacation. You know how we've had so many terrible barn fire stories this year with so many horses lost, and it's just been an incredible year for barn fires. Well, I have a happy one. I mean, it's not happy that their barn caught on fire, but more than 30 horses escaped unharmed Saturday morning when a two-alarm fire heavily damaged an apartment on the second floor of a large barn in Newton, New Hampshire. The fire broke out around 10 a.m. at Northgate Stables. While everybody was downstairs cleaning the stalls on the ground floor, they noticed the smoke coming out of the apartment above. Word of the fire spread, and within minutes, neighbors and other horse owners who didn't even have horses at the barn raced to the scene to help out. Within minutes, there were 100 people there helping get the horses out. So they must have lived in a community with people. But that just shows you that horse people will come. You know, it sort of relates back to that girl who did everything she could to save that little boy. You know, horse people will come to other horse people's aid in a second. That's the kind of people we are. And they got all of the horses out of this barn. They managed to get the fire out, and everybody is okay. So there's a barn fire story where they managed to have everything happen, and everything worked out fine. So they're not sure what caused the fire. They're looking into that. But thank God everybody got out okay.
Oh, wow, that is fantastic. We have just had such a bad year with barn fires, and to hear that all these horses escaped, wow, that really, that makes you feel good. That makes you feel really good. Well, hey, while you were gone this week taking a vacation, some of us were staying at home, and I was keeping up to date with everything Keeneland yearling sales. And I might have harassed a former guest of ours, although he gave me really no information, but I did harass Charles of Zenyatta and Charles. He's one of the assistant broodmare managers at Lanes and Farm. And I'm like, how's it going? Just trying to keep up, just in case we want to have on the show again. Got to keep the communication lines open. Plus, he's really good looking, and he handles Zenyatta on a daily basis. So I want to pay. I want to keep up that connection. Just when she has a baby, we're going to want pictures and all that stuff. But he just said how glad he was that the yearling sales were over. 13 days of yearling sales, and it finally ended. Now, check this out. Hopefully, this is a sign of a better economy. The average price of every horse went up 18% to $76,511. That was the average price for a horse at the Keeneland yearling sales. You know, I spend $1,000 on a horse and I'm like, oh my God, this thing better be awesome. These people are spending $76,511. I mean, a $20,000 horse in the riding world is really expensive. And they're buying untested yearlings.
Did you see how much the total sale was?
I'm going to tell you that right now. The
yeah.
total amount, gross sales, went up 12.7%. To check this out, this is, I don't know what percentage Keeneland gets, but they're happy. $223,487,800. That's how much was spent in horses in 13 days, $223 million. Holy cow. Apparently, so few people bred their horses because, you know, everybody was like, I'm not going to breed this year. So there was a decrease in the foal crop, which led to a rise in the quality, and it kept buyers active through the entire second week of a sale, which usually has a sharp drop-off. So everybody who is associated with the Keeneland yearling sales should be extremely excited on Halloween.
So I have a question.
A
so at the end of the sales and the little accountant girls are sitting in there counting all the checks and everything, how long does it take you to bring that stack of checks to the bank? You know how long it takes if you have four or five checks at the teller? Can you imagine bringing $223 million in and saying, here, I want to deposit this? Oh, my God.
You know, Glenn, I'm going to just go ahead and take a guess here that that really wasn't how they deposited $223,487,800.
I have to tell you something, though. We lived in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and they have one of the biggest car shows in Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the country. It's huge. 100,000 people a day come to this car show to buy parts, and they have cars, and it's a car show. And it's huge. I mean, it's huge. You wanted to leave town when this thing came because so many people came to town. It would take them 1 week with 10 people counting the cash, 24 hours a day from that sale.
Wow.
From that
oh,
show.
My God. There's money out there to be had, Glenn. We just need to go find it.
We need to find something else to do, Jamie. Nobody's giving us $223 million to be on the air.
Nah, it's not gonna happen. Not gonna happen. Well,
hey,
I got
good news for you too. More good news. You ready to hear it?
Okay.
The Lone Ranger is back on. God, this movie has been back off and back on so many times. Well, it looks like Disney has finally settled with Johnny Depp and Jerry Bruckheimer and Gore Verbinski, and now the movie is back on. They're going to film it January, February, March next year, and they're still hoping to have it out for a release around Christmas of next year. They had to come to an agreement, though. Get this. They had to come to an agreement to lower the budget for the movie from $250 million to $200
million.
It was reported that considerable work would need to be done to drop some of the supernatural elements of the script, and in addition, strip back some of the expensive set pieces, one of which was described as the biggest train sequence in film history. So they had to cut the budget by $50 million. Now, if you remember watching The Lone Ranger from the original series, the budget to make each one of those was about $5. So I think that they could have compromised, and I think they should have went a little cheesy on this one, just to, you know, be a little nostalgic back to the old series.
I don't understand why, when they had to cut the budget by $50 million, what exactly they're talking about when they had to cut these supernatural elements of the script. There is no supernatural in The Lone Ranger. There's a bad guy that's trying to rob a train. And then there's the Lone Ranger and Tonto who have to go chase the bad guy that's trying to rob the train. And then the train gets pulled over and bad guys board the train. And then the Lone Ranger crawls on top of the train with Tonto and they jump down in there. And then they get the bad guys and they hold them up. They're like, stick them up. And they got them. And then in the end, there's some girl on the train. And then the Lone Ranger, he gets the girl. They smooch. And then he and Tonto go running off into the sunset. What is so hard and expensive about that?
You just did it. We could do that whole movie for $100.
I mean, come on. I've been on a train ride. You know, you just get on the train and film me walking through it. I'll stick a gun in somebody's face, and you pay them $5 to act surprised. And then you get the Lone Ranger to come out and arrest me, and there you go.
Hey, I think we could get our listeners to play some of the parts, too. Robert Dunn, he'd be a good Lone Ranger. He'd be Tonto. We got to get somebody to play Tonto. You know,
you're Tonto.
You know, I'll be Tonto. I ride now up mountains and stuff. Johnny Depp, you know, he's playing Tonto. You know, I could do better than Johnny Depp, you know. Johnny Depp. And they're probably paying him $50 million to do the movie. I'd do it for $5, $6 million, probably.
Yeah. See, Glenn, we're brilliant. There's money out there to be had, and we need to figure out how to get it. Well, we just figured out a way. We're going to film our own Lone Ranger and Tonto movie. I don't understand why the budget has to be $200 million, but you know what? That's fine. Whatever.
I think Robert's going to look rather dapper in that little Lone Ranger outfit, don't you?
I think that we need to move on.
Robert now just turned the show off. All right, everybody. That's exactly. It. We're out of time. We're going to finish up the news tomorrow. We have so many more news stories, too. I got it. You know, I never did get to the news story about the Dixie Stampede and what their kind of trouble they're in down there in Pigeon Forge. We'll cover that first thing tomorrow's show. But thank you so much for joining us again. A lot of you listened. I looked at the numbers, and a lot of you listened the last week. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to check out the Stable Scoop radio show that came out on Friday. That show is called The Ladies Are Jousting, and we met one of the toughest girls on horseback. Her name is Jessica Post, and she is one of the few female full-contact jousters in the world. By the way, she's 6 foot tall, so
you just like to say she is a full contact anything.
Female jouster. I mean, how cool is that? That turned any guy on. A 6 foot tall, full contact female jouster. And she skins the tickets too. Plus, we had one of our listeners, Justin Harrison, who was her squire, was on the show with us as well. And we learned about all the kind of things that they get into in full female or full contact jousting. See, I changed that around already. I was getting all excited. You finish the show. I'm done.
Everybody, have a great week. I know it's Monday. Hang in there. Friday is only 4 days away now. So please, everybody, remember to... Oh, yeah, the cat. Jennifer posted the picture of my cat staring forlornly out the window. You're not going anywhere, kitty. Frank the cat is staying in the house for the rest of the day. He is grounded. Everybody, please spay, neuter, and geld, and have a great week.
Oh, and I got to add, Robert Dunn, he is listening, said, I need to start seriously working out if I'm going to be put on the big screen in an all-white costume. And on that note,
see you,
Robert. See you.